Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter, where we relentlessly mock clown world. We've got some good news to get into today. Tony, Rick, thanks for being here. Let's jump right into this wild one. So Bitcoin Teddy says a Big Mac will cost $70 in 30 years. And he says this may seem ridiculous, but it's the most likely scenario given what is going to happen to the U.S. economy. And I'm assuming he's just tracking inflation or monetary expansion. And whether he's exactly correct or directionally correct, it's certainly a prudent observation. Tony, what do you think? You think a Big Mac's going to cost $70 in a few decades?
It's going to cost close to that amount way earlier than a few decades at the rate things are going. The prices are already absurd, you know, and the money printing hasn't even kicked in again, like recently, which everybody's expecting it to, you know, any day now, literally. So, you know, when the dam breaks, it breaks fast, you know, like when things are going downhill, you know, the acceleration, you can't calculate it. When it's headed down, that's it. So how that translates into what kind of prices, like God knows, but you know, the fight for survival in the literal sense is going to be painful. And those that are not making those big numbers per month, those are the ones, unfortunately, that are going to feel the pinch. And usually when you've got a lot of them, that's when it sort of translates into civil problems, like civil riots, civil violence, things of that sort, which you don't want and you want to avoid at all costs. Now, how do you avoid this, you know, with the impending collapse of the money? I'm not really sure. Trying to convince all of these people to all of a sudden jump ship and, you know, adopt Bitcoin, well, you know, that's like wishful thinking. Eventually, they'll probably find their way to it. But for them to do it, you know, in the time frame that they need to do it, well, you know, I doubt that's going to happen. And so what do you want me to tell you, man? I mean, when the pain gets real, that's when people start to react. But it's not a pretty sight.
Yeah, Rick, what do you think?
It's pretty crazy, isn't it? It's almost inevitable, though. You know, I think like Tony says, like, you know, we could actually be at $70 a Big Mac way sooner than 2054. I think that's like conservative, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, just go and speak to someone who grew up maybe a couple of generations before you and ask them how much they paid for their first house. And the answer they'll give you will make you fall off your chair, right? I can't remember off the top of my head, but I'm sure if I asked my dad how much was a house, you know, back when you were in your 20s, I think he'll say it's like, you know, 50 grand or something, right? And that same house today will be $500,000, maybe more than that. So, yeah, I mean, could the price of a Big Mac 10x in 20 years? Yeah, like you know, I don't even think that's a really that bold a statement to make. What's really interesting, though, and what I like about this post is that it kind of encourages people to see how badly the dollar behaves as like a measure of value, right? Like if a Big Mac can suddenly become worth $70, what does that say about the dollar? And you know what else is quite interesting as well is, you know, my wife, she works or used to work in like fast moving consumer goods companies, like some of those really, really big ones. And they used to actually keep, there was an old like magazine that used to get sent around in the UK that had like all these products, a certain sort of like catalog business, right? And they used to keep a copy of this catalog for every year. And they had a copy that goes back like 50, 60 years. And they used to use that to go back and sort of check what inflation had done to various product categories and stuff like that. And God, I'd love to get my hands on some of those books, because I think if, you know, if we ever could go back and flick through like what things used to cost 20 years ago, 30 years ago, a lot more people might actually wake up. Because I think what happens is we lose that perspective, right? Imagine you could travel back 60 years in time and start wandering into shops and buying milk and bread and cheese and all this stuff. You'd think, hang on a minute, this is crazy, nothing makes sense. So yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think, you know, spending any money on a Big Mac is maybe not the best thing to do, right? It's not particularly good quality food. And here's the crazy thing, right? If you think the price of a Big Mac is expensive, imagine what it would really be if they still cooked it with good quality ingredients. You know, once upon a time, a Big Mac actually used like good quality ingredients, right? They used to cook their fries in tallow instead of seed oils, and all of this stuff. So actually, part of the reason it hasn't gone, I don't know what a Big Mac is now in the US, Michael, right? Let's say it was $10, but you know, imagine that was made with the same quality ingredients it was made with, you know, back in the 60s, and it would have to be like $35. So, you know, inflation's a lot worse than people think, and it's going to get worse still. So yeah, buy some Bitcoin, or buy some Big Macs, because they're going to hold their value better than the dollar, and with all the preservatives in them, they'll probably last all the way to 2054 as well. And then you can start selling Big Macs for $70. You'd be the big shot, right? Big burger man making all the money.
Sage advice, N not investing advice though. The comment I had is if, man, if the low quality, relatively low quality ingredients of a Big Mac get you to $70, you know, 30 years from now, what is the cost of grass-fed, grass-finished ground beef? Right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like local high quality stuff, and your wages aren't going to keep up. The thing, I think people have a hard time conceiving of this sort of like this notion because it sounds outrageous today, but it's like that's the whole point. $8. I mean, he had let's see, I think it was $5.69, but I think a Big Mac's a little bit more than that on average right now. I think he was just making a point. That's an outrageous amount. I mean, that's a 10x or you know whatever x from what it was 30 years ago. And so if we're you know sitting close to $10, you know a 10x would be $100, you know 30 years into the future. But people just it's so insidious because it happens slowly, and it eats away inflation eats away at your purchasing power. And you know subtly, unless we have major spikes like we had you know a year ago where we hit 9% and people are suddenly forced to deal with like this is absolutely crazy. So yeah, again, take Rick's advice, buy some Bitcoin, buy some Big Macs, put them in the freezer, and you'll be a wealthy person someday. All righty, up next. So Mark Andreessen was on Rogan's podcast, and basically we'll watch this video here, but 30 tech founders were secretly debanked under the current administration here. Let's watch this video.
This started about 15 years ago with this thing called Operation Choke Point, where they decided to, as marijuana started to become legal, as prostitution started to become legal, and then guns, which there's always a fight about. Under the Obama administration, they started to debank legal marijuana businesses, escort businesses, and then gun shops, just like your gun manufacturers. And just like you're done, you're out of the banking system. And so if you're running a medical marijuana dispensary in 2012, like you, guess what? You're doing your business all in cash, because you literally can't get a bank account. You can't get a Visa terminal. You can't process transactions. You can't do payroll. You can't do direct deposit. You can't get insurance. Like none of that stuff is, you've been sanctioned, right? None of that stuff is available. And then this administration extended that concept to apply it to tech founders, crypto founders, and then just generally political opponents. And so,
God.
yeah, so that's been like super pernicious.
I wasn't aware of
Oh,
that.
100%. And this is called, so it was Operation Choke Point 1.0 was 15 years ago against the pot and the guns. Choke Point 2.0 is primarily against their political enemies and then to their disfavored tech startups. And it's hit the tech world like we've had like 30 founders debanked in the last 4 years.
Real.
Yeah. It's been a big recurring pattern.
30.
But this is one of the reasons why we ended up supporting Trump. It's like we can't live in this world. We can't live in a world where somebody starts a company that's a completely legal thing and then they literally like get sanctioned, right, and embargoed by the United States government through a completely unaccountable, no, by the way, no due process. None of this is written down. There's no rules. There's no court. There's no decision process. There's no appeal. Who do you appeal to, right? Like who do you go to get your bank account back?
So that is our government hard at work. Your tax dollars in action, taking down inconvenient institutions that they don't like and they don't want to support. Rick, why don't you kick this one off? What's your reaction to this?
Yeah, well, I mean, it really underlines the whole point of Bitcoin in the first place, right? Is that, you know, if you leave your wealth with someone else or in the legacy financial system, and you do something that, I don't know, powerful people decide that they dislike, or you know, maybe you have like a political opinion that they don't like, and that you're expressing, it's very easy to censor you financially. and kick you out of your bank account. I have some experience of this myself to a certain extent. So it's not quite as bad as it was in the US, but in the UK, I used to have a skincare manufacturing business right before COVID. And we did start specializing in making cannabis-based therapeutics, because one thing that's quite amazing about some of these cannabis extracts is the impact it'll have on diseases like psoriasis and stuff like that, right? And we had some crazy success applying CBD oils to psoriasis and eczema and that sort of thing. So, but as soon as we started interacting with any products like that, it became nigh on impossible to get like payment processors for like online e-commerce stores, that sort of thing. Business insurance became a real headache, right? Nobody really wanted to touch you. You know, the amount of testing we did, I mean, every single product we made was tested like really, really quite stringently. Like we had paperwork for days for each of our products. But even you'd find like some retailers and that sort of thing would struggle to work with you, because then their banking partners would question why they're working with a business like yours. So, yeah, it's crazy. It completely stifles innovation, even for companies that are working well within, you know, the legal rights that they have. And again, it becomes like a political tool, right? Money then becomes a political tool. So, yeah, if we leave money in the hands of governments and central banks, then that is a problem. It's a tool of control. If you do something they don't like, then they can just switch you off just like that. And hey, listen, you know, if you want any real good advertisement for Bitcoin here, it's that, you know, the alternative is headed towards like a CBDC, right? Which would be even worse, a central bank digital currency. Because, I mean, if you think the dollar is bad now, it could get so much worse, right? Because if they completely remove cash out of the system and they put you on a programmable CBDC, then they can start playing all sorts of crazy games with you, right? They could say, for example, look, the money in your account, if you don't spend it within the next 6 months, then it's going to lose half of its value. Or, you know, this money that you were planning on spending or saving for a house, you know, you're only allowed to buy X amount of meat with it. You're only allowed to, you know, buy this amount of fuel with it. You know, they use money as a means to control you. And that's exactly what Mark Andreessen is talking about here, is if you start a business or you challenge them in any sort of way that they don't like, then yeah, they will absolutely use the banking system to unfairly punish you. So yeah, it's a great advertisement for Bitcoin. And it's kind of, it'd be nice to see on these podcasts, you know, when they talk about this sort of thing, you know, it'd be nice to see them point at the obvious solution more often, which is Bitcoin. But yeah, what can you say more than, yeah, it's just more of the same bad behavior by the banks, and that's why you should be your own.
Yeah, this is the stuff that just pisses me off so much. Like I think you just become accustomed to your dollars losing value. But man, when they like directly target people trying to provide value in the marketplace, you know, whether they are providing value or not, that's to be determined. I mean, the market will decide, are these services worth, you know, because a lot of the crypto nonsense is completely unworthy. But that's not some bureaucrat's decision to make. You know, it's insane. Tony, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm really happy that, you know, we're casting a light on this more and more these days, because it just underlines what we've been screaming about for so long, that, you know, the governments are actually, most of them are enemies of the people. I mean, the you know, the enemy within, it's very clear who it is now. I mean, imagine these were all legal businesses that were unfairly shut down or debanked or what have you. Imagine if they were illegal. Well, what would be the repercussions then? But what's more infuriating to me is that seeing a legal business being debanked, meaning like all these players that are part of this ruse, like who's going to go after them now? Like if you're shutting down or debanking a legal business, then you're essentially doing something illegal, right? That's against the law. Where's the prosecution for that? Nobody talks about this, right? So if a legal business gets shut down, who shut him down? The bank. Well, who's going to go after the bank for doing this? All of these people should be thrown in jail. All of them, every single one of them. And I mean, but nobody says anything, because they're like, okay, yeah, you know, you sit and complain. But sitting and complaining, you know, that resolves nothing. Action fixes problems. And so Bitcoin, you know, was created now to give the finger to all of this mafia, this bully ring, that has been going on for far too long. And as long as people, you know, opt out from the fiat system, you know, that's what it takes. I mean, if you don't want to go to war with them, which you can't unless you've got an army bigger than theirs, well, how are you going to defeat them? The only way is to debank them. Stop using their product. You know, like you may think, oh, it doesn't matter because it doesn't affect me. Well, one day your turn is coming. You're going to say or do something, or maybe somebody's going to decide that your face somehow doesn't make sense anymore. And now you're going to be put on a blacklist. Then what are you going to do? You know, like this whole circus, this whole clown world must be completely destroyed and never allowed to be rebuilt. Hopefully Bitcoin fixes this. Time will tell.
The frustrating thing is, like, I'm a free market guy. If a bank voluntarily makes the determination on their own that they don't want to support THC businesses, you know, anyone involved in cannabis or crypto, fine. But you know what? There's a demand for both of those products, whether you like it or not. And there are going to be some banks that are all about it and that are going to specialize in servicing those companies and understanding their specific needs. The fact that these decisions are always made because someone's sneaking in the back door from government saying, don't support these. We're, you know, we don't have your back. We're not going to. It's like the fact that that's even a conversation that's obviously being had is, it's just beyond me. This is for me just one of the most frustrating things about government. Again, I am cautiously optimistic, but I hope the next 4 years some of this stuff gets dismantled because it's just insane. Like, just let the market operate. We can decide on our own as individuals what we want to support, what we want to buy, and they just need to leave us alone. So Bitcoin, yeah, man, I'm with you, Tony. Like, Bitcoin's the solution.
Look, the solution, you just mentioned it. All it takes is mass non-compliance when you know that it's bullshit. Mm-hmm. But the problem is 90% of people just go along with whatever it is, even if they disagree with it. So I don't know what's worse, having these bullies in place or having a bunch of dummies that just sit there and take it.
Well, I think you're right that there are lots of people just sitting there and taking it. The problem is what they're doing is they're not directly pissing off the masses by, you know, it's much sneakier. They're going to the banks who they have the authority to regulate, shut down. And so the banks they're the ones who are put who are in the position where they have to decide, am I going to comply? Am I going to risk getting my banking charter taken away? And so a lot of the manipulation that happens at the, you know, on a broad scale that affects us as individuals, it's not really happening directly. There's like this intermediary where they're interfering with banking or they're interfering with education or they're, you know, they're going to take away your subsidy, you know, or whatever, you know, tax credits for electric vehicles, whatever. So it's like once they give you that carrot, they can take it away. And if they take it away, you might have a zombie company on your hands that isn't going to survive, you know? And like we saw that with Signature Bank, I think it was, they basically just shut them down. They were solvent. They, you know, they weren't doing, there was no funny business, and they just decided, no, we don't want you supporting crypto companies. And
you're right. So that was that. You're right. You're absolutely right. But you know what happened in Lebanon when these things took place? That's when you started seeing bank managers dead in front of their cars in parking lot with a hammer in their skull.
Yeah.
Okay. So these things will eventually happen if nothing is stopped. I mean, you can only bully for so much, right? And at some point, somebody says enough is enough, and they're going to take the action that you don't want to see. So the banks are to blame. They have a choice. They chose wrong out of fear, obviously. But it's the wrong choice regardless. It's an illegal choice.
Yeah, we need all of the banks to step up, make the right decision. Best case though is we just cut it off at the source, like, you know, like we cut the dragon's head off. That is big government. So we'll see. Alrighty. Up next, we've got Judy Shelton. So I hear this name thrown around. I haven't really looked into Judy Shelton a lot. As I understand it, she's an economic advisor to Trump, and she is talking about, she's a big advocate for sound money. She, it sounds like, would love to reintroduce a gold standard for the U.S. dollar. At this point, I don't know how I don't know what the mechanics are of making something like that happen. But I think you'd have to just massively devalue the dollar against gold, and gold would shoot to 20, 50, 80,000. I think this is something Larry Lepard talks about from time to time. This is also a topic that Saifedean has referred to as the biggest threat to Bitcoin. And it's not something he's suspected is a likely scenario, but it's interesting that there's at least an article about it now. But if the government suddenly forced itself into fiscal responsibility by backing the dollar to gold, you know, a lot of the problems that Bitcoin solves could be mitigated. So I'll make my last comment. I'll turn it over to you guys. The problem is gold hasn't changed since the 1930s, when it was centralized, easily confiscated by government at banks. You know, it's easy to break the gold standard when you slowly become more and more irresponsible. Like, it doesn't really beholden them to a gold standard just because we say we're on a gold standard. Like, we've literally learned this. And I'll also add that in a more globalized digital economy, gold has a lot of other marks against it that people don't realize. That the 1930s, it's a very different world than we live in today, right? I mean, real settlement still takes a long time if you're doing trade with China from the United States or what have you. So a gold standard would be better than what we're doing, but we'd end up back in the same place, even if it took us 50 or 100 years to get there. I mean, I just don't think there's any escaping this. What I like about Bitcoin is it's auditable. Is if we back the dollar to Bitcoin, which would severely devalue the dollar in Bitcoin terms, at least you can say, here's my proof of reserves. This is what we have. These are the dollars that we're allowed to print and use as currency. Like, that's really the solution. But anyway, I'll let you guys talk. Rick, what do you think?
Well, I mean, yeah, look, 15 years ago, this would be something that I'd find like a really interesting proposal, right? Because understanding the problem with having money that's backed by nothing, that is a huge problem. And look at where we've ended up because of it. And, you know, the dollar and fiat currency was far, far better when it was backed by gold than it is today, right? It was far more stable. Things were more predictable. You didn't have all these inflationary problems. It wasn't so easy to fund endless wars. And the distribution of wealth wasn't so vastly, you know, skewed in the favor of the 1% or whatever. So, you know, the fact that there's people out there that think moving back to a gold standard might be a good idea is not massively surprising to me. It's just, I guess, ever since finding Bitcoin, it's just not interesting to me anymore. You know, I think you raised some interesting points. I mean, one of the things you said there was, if the government decided to force itself to be fiscally responsible. And that's the point where I almost like start giggling a little bit, right? Because can you imagine a government forcing itself to be fiscally responsible? I mean, expecting. Yeah, I mean, man, that's like saying, like, imagine a kid didn't want a bag of sweets. Like, of course they're never ever going to do it. So it's, I guess, it just strikes me as like it can only ever be really theoretical at the moment, right? Whether that happens. So yeah, like an interesting thing to chat about briefly, I guess. But I think you also raised a good point. How would you do it? How would you revalue gold? You know, I don't even understand the process by which you would do that without causing absolute chaos in the economy anyway. What is quite interesting is you mentioned Saifedean and said that could be the one threat to something like Bitcoin. And again, I think, and probably I don't want to misspeak on his behalf, I think he probably doesn't think like it's a threat that would win out against Bitcoin, but it's
yeah,
something
not an
that's
existential
maybe
threat. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's unlikely to kill Bitcoin, but maybe it's the closest thing that would seem like a viable alternative to Bitcoin is a dollar backed by gold. Because, you know, gold is not finite in the same way that Bitcoin is. And, you know, okay, you can't move it around the world as easily, but at least if you backed the dollar with gold, the dollar itself would be immeasurably more stable, right? And so I guess at that point, the government might have a much stronger pitch to convince people to use the dollar instead of adopting Bitcoin, right? Because at the moment, you know, the sales pitch for Bitcoin's really easy because the dollar's such an absolute disgrace. Yeah. I don't see it ever happening. So, you know, and even in that scenario, even in the scenario where you know, we move back to the dollar on a gold standard, I think Bitcoin is still going to win. You know, ultimately, Bitcoin, I think, will demonetize gold. Like, gold's always going to be valuable, right? Because we use it in electronics, we use it in jewelry, and it's, you know, it's a pretty metal. So it's always going to have some value to it, but it will lose its monetary premium when everybody figures out that Bitcoin is far superior. So you know, what the value of gold will be in the future, I don't know. I'm not saying that it's worth less, but it's not going to function as money or the store of value that Bitcoin will. So on a long enough timeline, I think gold loses anyway. So yeah, I mean, I guess the fascinating thing again is, like, I don't want to be too harsh here, right? Because here's a politician that probably is in favor of things that I'm in favor of, like sound money. But, you know, it would be remiss not to point out that once again, it's a politician that for me is spending an awful lot of time and energy on something that's a complete and utter waste of time. It's not practical. It's never going to happen. And we have a far better solution that's already available that doesn't even require any politicians to do anything. So, yeah, you know, I guess directionally, a politician who seems like they've worked out maybe the problem and wants to move in a sensible, more sensible direction, but still falling short of understanding what's really going on. Politicians doing pointless things, as always, eh?
Yeah, I think I would understand this position better if you'd been in a coma for the last 15 years and you woke up and you're like, wow, we're at 36 trillion and, you know, debt, we need to, like, the gold standard. And it's like, you've never heard of Bitcoin, but it's like 15 years later, if you're in this role, you need to be doing some research. And like, if you're pushing for sound money, if you want to back the dollar, if you want to save the dollar and you want to use it as currency, you want to rein in fiscal irresponsibility. I mean, Fort Knox hasn't been audited in like forever, right? Like, mm-hmm. You can audit the blockchain, Bitcoin's time chain, every 10 minutes. Like, it's easy. Like, we can do this. But again, yeah, I'm with you. I appreciate her sentiment and the fact that I, you know, it's my sense is we're on the same team in terms of what we desire for the world. But legacy solution for a modern problem. Tony.
Man, here, and the solution is much simpler than this. You have to ignore and eliminate all politicians from the equation. You solve absolutely nothing if you leave the power of money within any human being's control. What is the point of Bitcoin if you're gonna, or sound money in, you know, in that sense, if you're going to leave it, you know, at some point to be in the hands of someone who will unavoidably get corrupted or start doing things, you know, for more in their interests and the interests of the country itself. There's nothing out there, okay? If you want a solution that works, you have to remove the human element from it. It has to be something that cannot be corrupted. Gold, anything else that can be touched or manipulated or not soundly audited by human beings will not work. So for the first time ever, ever, there is something that fits that criteria, and that is Bitcoin. And that is the only thing that can fix this world once and for all, because you have to remove government. The power of government and money must be separated like oil and water. It can never be allowed to mix again, because as soon as you do that, then you're repeating the whole cycle of corruption that we've had since the beginning of time. Nothing will change unless this changes. And so Bitcoin is the only solution. They can suggest all sorts of ideas. They can suggest bananas, monkeys, gold, silver, whatever they want. Nothing will work. As long as the solution is connected to a human being, it will fail.
Yeah. I can just envision, you know, Trump taking office. They get us on a gold standard. And then the year 2033, Executive Order 7102 is signed, confiscating gold from private citizens. And then the year 2071 comes around and we leave the gold standard. And it's just like, you know, history on repeat. All righty, we've got one more. So, Rick, this was, man, you just knocked it out of the park with this meme. We got to share this with the crowd. We've got almost 250,000 views on this meme that you threw out yesterday. And, dude, 5,000 likes, almost 600 reposts. So why don't you you tell us a little bit about this?
Yeah, basically, I mean, the whole point is, like it says, when Bitcoin increased your purchasing power 5x, but gave you a low time preference so you no longer desire material things, I guess is, I guess it just really resonated with a lot of Bitcoiners, because I think we all probably share quite different but often quite similar journeys when we discover Bitcoin and start to figure out what it's all about, right? I think 95% of people I know in Bitcoin probably came here first of all to try and make some money, right? Because they hear about this crazy new currency, it's uploads in value, they think maybe I should buy some. You know, they're at the same start, the start of the rabbit hole is, should this be in my portfolio? Should I invest in Bitcoin? That's where almost everybody starts. A few people get stuck there, right? And they continue to see Bitcoin as just an investment and always plan to sell it later for more dollars and all this sort of stuff, right? But the people who I think do enough reading and go deep enough down the rabbit hole, they start to realize that what Bitcoin does is it realigns your incentives, right? It's a powerful tool for that. So, for example, when you, let's say you're earning in dollars, right? And your dollars lose value at 10, 15% per annum, whatever, right? Because they keep printing them out the wazoo. Then whether you're really cognizant of that or not, there is an incentive underlying everything in your life that means that it actually makes sense to spend your money. Because if it's losing value that quickly, then the natural incentive that you follow without even realizing it is that you should spend that money, because it makes no sense to hold on to it. So you get dragged into this fiat mentality where, you know, we go after things like fast fashion. You know, you may as well buy a t-shirt that only lasts two washes, because, well, there's no point keeping the money that's going to evaporate. So, yeah, all right, I'll buy another t-shirt, I'll buy another CD, I'll buy more stuff I don't need. Because the money's worthless, so spend it, right? And then you start accumulating hard money, right? Hard money that if you hold on to it, because it's completely scarce, it actually buys you more over time the longer you hold it. Because as technology advances and we produce things more quickly, if you've got a hard, scarce money, things will become cheaper against it over time. So what that does to you is it makes you start thinking a lot more carefully about the purchases you're going to make, right? The best way I could describe this is, let's say you think Bitcoin's going to 10x in the next 5 years, right? A lot of people do. So you might be looking at, I don't know, a new outfit that would cost $200, right? Now, you might think, well, hang on, before I buy this, that could be worth $2,000 or the equivalent in 10 years if Bitcoin continues doing what it's doing. And you start thinking, well, that's an entire holiday. So you reassess the purchase decision, right? You sort of say, well, hang on a minute, do I even really need these clothes? And then you start getting even deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole. And then you start thinking, well, hang on, at some point I am going to buy clothes. But if I'm exchanging this very, very scarce currency that I've worked extremely hard to earn and that is likely to appreciate in value a lot, then what you do is you say, well, when I do exchange this for clothing or something that I need, I expect to buy something that's very, very high quality, but that I won't have to replace every 6 weeks. So it kind of moves your focus away from like this, you know, fast fashion, instant dopamine, cheap quality products that you throw away, and drives you more to wanting to save and delay your purchasing behavior and your consumption patterns, because your money will be worth more in the future. But also on top of that, when you do make those purchase decisions, it encourages you to look and seek out quality and craftsmanship rather than just the cheapest, you know, low quality rubbish. So I think I'm probably not alone in having that experience myself. And hey, listen, man, I don't wake up and think, oh, this meme's going to take off on Twitter. I just, you know, I see the little picture of SpongeBob in the coffee shop and I was like, huh, you know, sometimes I think about this and I put it on the meme, and I guess they get shared when they resonate with people. And you know what I like about this more than anything is that I think Bitcoin people, they get tarnished with a lot of brushes, right? We've been called psychopaths and God knows what else. And, you know, people all think we're here for Lambos, right? But I guarantee if I'd have made a meme about, oh, I can't wait to buy a Lambo or something, if I'd have posted that, very few people would have liked it or shared it. But then if you post about something about your consumption patterns being delayed and that, you know, you're actually not interested in material things, maybe you're interested in experiences, you notice that the whole Bitcoin community practically has shared it. So you realize that actually this is not a get rich quick scheme. And the people who stay in it long enough really start to understand that. And I think start to value everything differently. So it makes me happy that it resonates with other people, because it means we're all having quite similar experiences on this crazy journey we're on.
And there's no one who's better at this than Tony. Tony, one of my favorite things about you, man, is like you embody the World Economics Forum, you will own nothing and be happy. I mean, like you spend like passports, residencies, travel, like that's kind of your expense. You could have experiences and ultimate freedom. So if you want to leave a comment on sort of your approach to this.
Well, of course, this meme also resonates with me, because before my collapse, before they stole all my life savings, you know, I was guilty of all of these things that you mentioned earlier, you know, the fast cars, the fashion and blah, blah, and all that stuff, you know, the fancy lifestyle, until everything was blown up and taken away. And, you know, that sort of like reformats your brain. And when I went through that journey, walked through that hell and came out the other side, well, I came out a completely different person. And when I understood Bitcoin, everything that I used to do in the past died along with me. You know, that version 1.0 was dead and buried. I don't seek material things anymore. Like, I used to be really a car guy. You know, I grew up drifting, you know, the Fast and the Furious lifestyle. That was me for many years. I look at a nice car now, and it's like, you know, putting my hand on my ass. It means nothing, you know. It's like, and I walk away. Whereas just a few years ago, I'd be like, "Oh shit," you know, like I need to do this, I need to get this. But you know, talk to the right people, wheel and deal, try to find your way in, you know, behind the steering wheel. But now it means nothing. Same thing with the jewelry. Same thing with the watches. Same thing with the fashion. I go after experiences now, and exactly like you mentioned, things that actually matter. I keep my inner circle very, very close. I don't need those thousands of people that I used to know in the past. They can all go kiss my ass, because none of them were there when I needed them the most. So that also, you know, reformats the way you look at life and people. Most people in your life are meaningless. They bring zero value to you. And you can prove this by, you know, hopefully you never have to experience it. But if you did find yourself in such a hellhole, see how many of them actually are around. Chances are, probably none, or maybe one or two of them. So you take that into account, and it really reprograms your entire brain and mindset. And Bitcoin helps you do that, because it is hard money. You're not going to get it easily. You know, to get every sat that you earn, like, you really have to grind and provide tremendous value to earn that sat. It's not something that you're going to get. It's not going to fall from the sky for you. And so you appreciate it. You know, it's like they say, easy come, easy go. When somebody inherits money from his father, you can tell within 10 seconds, this guy's an idiot who hasn't spent a day working, because he's going to blow it on all sorts of stupidities. But the guy who actually earned it, you know, probably spends on nothing or very little. That's how you know. So Bitcoin puts you, like, realigns you properly. It changes your mindset. It makes you a better person, in my opinion. And so, yeah, so the Bitcoin mindset is not after the fiat nonsense. That's, you know, it's a meaningless and void life when you chase fiat, because, like you said, Rick, this is, you might as well get rid of it, you know, because it's going to lose value on its own anyhow.
Well said. So for anyone listening, first of all, thank you for tuning in. And if Bitcoin has increased your purchasing power 5x, that only lasts if you know how to custody and protect it properly. So go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you do that the right way the first time. Bitcoin's been pumping. Do not take chances on this. Thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We can also help you with protecting your online privacy, setting up privacy phones, Plan B residency options. We would love to have a chat with you. Gentlemen, thank you as always for the time today. This was fun.
Michael, it's always a pleasure, man.
Thanks, man.
Cheers, guys.